station number 14977, Ernest Harvey, Reel 8.
Mr. E. Harvey, Reel 8. Did you get involved in patrol actions, Mr. Harvey?
Yes, quite a lot. I was on patrol once with a Sergeant Garnham, a Lance Corporal, and another three privates. And we were told we had to find out where the Germans were, find these positions, and report back. We hadn't to get involved whatsoever, just to find out where the Germans were. So I always remember Sergeant Garden was leading the patrol, followed by the lads corporal, and I was in the rear. And we went up this narrow path, and there was trees on either side, tall trees. And after we got to the end of these tall trees, there was like a chateau. Actually, it wasn't a chateau, it was like a high wall, I'd say about 10 foot high. And we went to the left of it. And we went through this hedge to the left and along by the wall, and we went through the first hedge, and after we got through the first hedge, we came to this, we were going along this side of this chateau, what I call it, it was the high wall, when Jerry, we hadn't come to this other hedge, and Jerry was about 20 yards, I would think, from this other hedge. And then Jerry shouted, "Kaput, kaput." Of course, the immediate thing I did was straight on to the deck. He got that used with action, straight to the deck. And whether the others more or less were doing the same, and the sergeant, he was leading the patrol, he dashed across the field. He didn't come straight back, and zigzagging. I've never seen a man run so fast in my life. And Jerry opened out with his spandrels. Well, there's nothing we could do. Because the simple reason was, he was only, maybe 20 yards away, and all we could do was try and get back. Now, I saw the others get up and they ran forward. Why they went forward, I didn't know, but I found out afterwards why. But anyway, I start crawling back. Now I got back to this hedge, and when I get back to this hedge, he starts throwing these small mortars at me. And with these mortars, they were just small mortars, but if they had to get more or less a direct hit. You know, if you kept down, they just burst on the either side of you, and you just had to keep down. But I knew, and the spandrels was, I mean, the rate of the spandrels, I wouldn't like to say, but they're very fast. And we came in far in bursts. And I knew I had to get through that hedge. As soon as the burst, he stopped firing, I dived through the hedge. And I no sooner got through the hedge, and all the hedge was riddled with bullets. So I crawled so far back, and eventually I got back. And I reported back to the company commander. And he took me up to the artillery, an artillery dugout where the artillery officers were in the map, and I showed them exactly on the map, and eventually they start mortaring this position and putting an attack in. Now, they gave me a cup of tea, by the way, and anyway, said, right, we're going to advance, and we took this position, and after we'd taken the position, they found four of the men who was on patrol in the chateau. Well, what it was actually, it was like a large clearing. There was a large wall all the way around, and where my mates had gone into a gateway, to the right there was a door, but of course I wasn't in the position to see it, and had gone through this opening to the right, but they'd all been killed, and they asked me to go up and identify them, which I did do. And after that, well, it was about four days after, when Sergeant Garden got back. He'd been hiding out in the fields in a hedge for a few days. But he got back all right, eventually.
They'd ran forward, hoping to get through the gate and into the clearing. Is this They'd run forward hoping to get through the gate.
Well, the side of the wall, there was a wall, you see, on the right-hand side, where we were going up, there was a doorway. And whether they'd gone through that doorway or not, I don't know. But the inside inside this place when I went to die, and the door being shut more or less through the throat, had been, well, it was rumoured that they'd had a throat cut. How true that was, I don't know. But for me, I think it was with a spandrel that they'd been shot that much, you know, because they couldn't, there's no identity discs on them, you know, each soldier has two identity discs, there's no discs on them. Whether Jerry had taken them or not, I don't know. But that's how I got had to go and identify them.
Were they known to you when you set off on patrol, these men?
Well, I knew one of them, and I think it was either Lance Corporal Dodd or Todd, I'm not certain now, but it was either one or the other. But the other three privates, I just can't remember the names.
Was this a night patrol or a day
patrol? No, it was a day patrol. It was a daytime patrol, but all we had to do was make contact with the enemy, which we did do to our...
When you say you were on a few patrols, were you on any night patrols?
Yes, well, sometimes once went on a night patrol, and Jerry was supposed to be in this house, and there was about eight of us, and it was supposed to be a fighting patrol. Well, we went up to this house, and we tossed hand grenades in, and what have you, and then they all start shouting, attack, attack. But of course, we would come back over. Of course, that was the password, attack and retreat. And when they were shouting attack, they were coming back there. Back, and for me, there was nobody in this house at the time. Because really, I don't think Jerry had more sense to go in houses. If he'd be like us, if you get in a ditch where you get in a trench. Because houses were too obvious and too easy targets.
Preparation for a patrol, for a night patrol, what was the usual procedure?
Well, we just used to blacken our faces with mud, and everybody had they used to get the room ration before they went out, and make sure you had plenty of ammo, grenades. It was nearly all had grenades. Used to use these phosphorus bombs, what we used to use.
Was it a rifle that you carried?
It was a rifle mainly, which I wasn't too sweet on.
Was it explained to you or shown to you where you had to go before you set off?
No, really. I think what happened there, it was mainly a sergeant who used to take you, and he used to tell you what you were going to do. And he used to say, well, we're going to this such and such a place, and that was it.
Were there different types of patrol? You mentioned a fighting patrol.
Yeah.
That presumably was to fight.
The fight the Jerry's to go and... fight the Jerry's. You know, once you knew his position was, you would have a fighting patrol, and you knew Jerry was there, and then what you would do, you'd crawl up as near as you could and start and toss grenades and then start firing at him. You know, more or less to cause a general disturbance.
What other types of patrols and other duties did they do?
They used to have what you call a standing patrol. So the standing patrol, he used to be out all day. There'd only be two of you. But you would go out as far as you could, and then you would stop there. You know, in no man's land, you would stay there, and your idea was just to see what was happening, and keep an eye on if you could spot Jerry, anything was happening, and then one of you would get back. If you could see anything happening, get back and report. That was what we call a standing patrol.
You didn't have any wireless or telephone
communication? No, not then, no.
Other kinds of patrols?
No, I can't think of any other. No.
Were you ever sent out to try and capture Germans, see who was in front of you?
No. I remember this silly officer like saying, we'll go out tongue sniping. And I thought he was mad, like, you know. And of course, I think I had a pate then, and he come and got the pate off me, and I was carrying the bombs. And we sat up all night, and it was, I thought he was mad. And we were watching this road, you know. And he was at the side, just watching this road, and I sat fuzzing there all night. But, of course, these officers were like that, you know.
What was the name of this
officer? Well, I can't think of his name.
Were some of the officers silly in the way you described?
Well, I mean, there were some unfortunate things happened. I remember from an instance like we were getting ready to move this particular time, and it's laughable now, but it wasn't at the time. What happened was, when you get ready to move, you know, such as your latrine trenches, well, they're taken away and they fill them in. And this officer had been round visiting the troops, sort of, and then Jerry started mortaring us. We was getting ready to go into attack, but he got the first one on, and he started mortaring us. Well, everybody was diving into the trenches. Of course, this poor officer, he dived into the trench. Well, of course, it was a latrine trench. You know, and I always remember that, and afterwards we laugh about it, but...
I can't remember which officer it was.
I can't remember his name, but he called him Stinker after that.
What were the names of your officers in your own unit?
Well, the only one that I can remember mainly was Major Kirby. He was my company commander. And I always remember Major Atkinson. Well, he was mad, I think, that one.
What ways?
But I can tell you more about him later.
No, we'll leave that till later.
Yes.
But the NCOs and the other men that were actually in your unit, what were they
yes,
like?
Yes, well, Sergeant Smith, he was exceptional. Now, at the cornfield, after the cornfield, Sergeant Smith, he got this spando, and he had belts and belts of ammunition, and him and this corporal, I can't remember his name, they carried this spando all the way, and after we took a position up and dug in, he used to use this spando on the jerrys, and my, he couldn't half use it. He could take it to bits and put it together and clean it, and he nursed that spando, and it gave us extra support, and he was a boom to the men, and he was exceptional. Unfortunately, he was wounded just outside of Amiens. He had a hip wound. That's the last time I saw him.
Were the men close to you, and obviously in other units, who were known as comedians that kept the morale up?
Well, there was one chap, he was more of a comedian. He was a Sergeant Jarvis. He was very well liked, and unfortunately he was killed shortly before Mount Pecan, I think it was. It was a stray shell that came over, and it must have been a direct hit in his trench. Every now and again, maybe once a day, Jerry would send a shell over, and this particular shell was a direct hit. And he was a pleasant chap. He was a ginger-haired chap, I remember, and he came from Darlington. And when we went over there, I remember he was I'm positive he was a lance corporal, and he was made up on the field. And I always remember he'd pick this doll up somewhere and he was going to send it back. I don't know whether his wife had just had a baby or not. And he was very well liked. That was a nasty hit with the company, that.
Have you recollections of any other men close to you?
My own Lance Corporal Passfield. He was very good. Of course, he'd been in Sicily with the battalion, and he knew all about it. But he always carried a brain, and he could use it.
Where did you go to after this?
Well, I think it was shortly after this when we started to go to Condy Road, I think. Actually, it was my birthday, because I always remember I got a large cake from home, and I couldn't believe it. And I don't know whether I got it on the day of my birthday or not, but it came in a large biscuit tin, and I just thought, well, isn't it marvellous to think there's a war like this and you can still get a birthday cake from home. I thought the post office must have been fantastic. And
Was the post good? Were you receiving mail regularly?
Well, we did get mail now and again, yes, but to think I got such a large cake through there. And I always remember cutting the cake up because we were going into attack the following day. I think it was somewhere on the Condy Road. And I cut it up and split it up among the lads. And, that was it.
How important was mail to you?
Well, mail was very important, like, you know. But I think the main thing was at that time, I always remember when I got the cake, I says, oh my goodness, I hope I see this day out.
So you say you're near this wood on this Conde...
Conde Road. It was a what we call Conde Road. It was near Mount Pigorn. And, the fighting there was terrible. And the officers we lost there was nobody's business. Of course, it was all snipers. The snipers was picking the officers and NCOs off first. They were getting picked off like flies. It was serious. And then, of course, the artillery started doing the business again, and I think that's what did the trick.
Were the Germans leaving booby traps?
Yes, actually, they left booby traps. After I'd been on that patrol, I didn't mention this, but that patrol I'd been on at this chateau, when we took the position, we had casualties going up towards the chateau by booby traps. The very place where the patrol where I was on had gone, there was about four men badly injured that had these S-mines, and they were going, and they had about four casualties just going up there. That's going towards his position. And of course, he used to have telemines all over the place, but he was laying those that quickly, you could see them, you know, you could, such as the main roads, those were mainly for the tanks. But those were no problem, the telemines, because we could just lift them up and put them to the side of the road.
Was it more difficult with the S-mines?
Well, the S-mines, they were very dodgy. Of course, mine, I never come across one myself there, you know. But of course, with doing the course on mines, I knew all about them, and I knew just how dangerous they were. I mean, if anyone stood on one, well, he more or less to say he lost a leg. It was as simple as that. But he was very unfortunate if he did.
Were there other kinds of booby traps within houses or buildings?
Yes, he used to booby trap the houses, and he'd booby trap anything if he could, even the bodies, you know. So...
Were you warned against this?
We were warned against them. Well, we didn't. We never touched the bodies, kept off them, and we would never take anybody's watch or anything off them, which was warning. There was some who did, but we found out if they were took prisoner, they seemed to get shot. We found that, like, so after that, we, on no circumstances would we take any watches, anything from Jerry's, because we found out that we knew these chaps had been taken prisoner, but we also knew they had Jerry watches on them. And if they had that, well, it was it, like.
How did you deal with snipers if you caught one of them? Did you catch
If we caught a sniper, they used to... I mean, these snipers, they're nearly all young chaps, and the guns they had were really fantastic, because, I mean, they had the telescopic sights on, and they all had these binoculars, and they were right little bees. I mean, personally, I think some of them would get shot, but we were in no position to shoot them. I mean, we used to, well, give them a good kicking and take the binoculars, take everything off them and take the belts off them and bang them back. But, the snipers, they were deadly. And they were arrogant. I mean, personally, I think if I had my own way, I think, and the lads would have had no bother, they would have been shot. In fact, I think some would have been shot, you know, but unofficially.
Were you warned, of course, not to shoot, to control yourself?
Oh, yes, we hadn't to. We were told not to, you know.
It must be difficult, though, in a battle situation.
Oh, in a battle sense. I mean, if it was in a battle, well, I mean, if he was firing at you and you knew where he was, well, he wouldn't get out alive, put it that way, you know. But if he was to come out and put his hands up, we would take him prisoner. But if he didn't, he would get shot. It was as simple as that. Oh no, if he was firing at you, well, he'd had it.
Did you become so angry at times through losing men around you that you really had to control yourself?
We got into a pitch where we used to send our own snipers out in the bow cards. We used to send one or two snipers out ourselves certain places looking for the snipers, you know. And we used to get quite a few knocked off that way.
If you were held up by a strong position, what was the routine? Did you get support?
Well, the routine was to get the artillery support, and once the artillery support had the map reference, well, it was curtains, because the artillery was spot on. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And the jury used to, I mean, sometimes he would, if you'd taken the position, one or two would pop up and start firing, but the bulk of them were the two shell-shocked, you know, through the artillery.
You would come across empty French homes. Was there any looting or taking of things from
others? Well, no, I don't think so. I didn't see much looting. No, the British soldier, he didn't do much looting. We didn't have time for looting, as I say. We were too busy looking after our lives to think about looting, anything like that. As I say, we were too busy advancing and digging in. It was, we had no time for anything like that.
Where did you move to next?
Well, the next, if my memory serves me right, was Falle. We were going through the Falle Gap. We were mopping up in Falle. And, oh, it was, well, it's indescribable. I couldn't describe it, really. For about a mile, there was guns, trucks full of soldiers, all bent out vehicles, horse-drawn vehicles, anything you can imagine, tanks. You can just imagine for the whole mile, they were all, oh, it was terrible. And burnt cattle. Well, it was really, after that, I thought the war would have been over, to tell the truth. I saw that many German soldiers killed there. It was really pitiful. Of course, they'd been blasted. I heard afterwards that there was 18 German divisions had been caught in the Falle pocket. But going through there and seeing all that, it was, oh, it was indescribable.
This affected you in that way?
Well, it affected us in such a way that we were under the impression that surely after this, Jerry will pack in after that, you know, because there must have been hundreds of them, hundreds of Germans wiped out there, and well, you couldn't describe it. For him to carry on fighting after that, well, I think it was shocking. At least that's what we thought, but he was still there. There's no doubt about that.
What were the Germans like? Were they coming in now as very young or old? Or what kind of age range
was it? There was a lot of young ones and there was a lot of old ones. And there was still some who was quite arrogant, you know. It's unbelievable the way some of them went on, you know.
You mentioned the Free French. Did you get in close contact with them?
We did do, yes. Every now and again we would come in touch with them. But as I said, all the bridges, every bridge I came across, the French had already taken it. We had no problems there. Those were very good.
You didn't see any of them who had collaborated with the Germans being dealt with?
Well, I did at Brussels, but this is later on.
After Falle, you would be moving pretty quickly, because this is the retreat.
Yes, after Falle, I think our next stop was at Amiens, and it was there, just outside Amiens, on the way to Amiens, where our Sergeant Smith, he was badly wounded in the thigh. Now, that was by artillery. And that was the last I saw of him. And when we got to Amiens, the Marquis had taken the bridge there. But we didn't stay Amiens long, because it was after that we went on to Eindhoven.
You'll be going now through French towns which were barely touched. What kind of reception were you getting?
Well, in Belgium we got a marvellous reception. But I couldn't say that much about France. You know, because I think they'd suffered too much, I think, the French. I think that was why. At least that was my opinion at the time. The French really, I didn't think they wanted to see us, quite honestly. You know, I think they'd really suffered. You know, I mean, well, you can just imagine what they'd gone through in Normandy, like they'd been blasted from the air and everything what had happened. And I mean, the civilians must have had lots of casualties.
Were you having to mop up Germans as you went on this advance?
In Falle, yes, but we didn't have much problem with them, because they were all coming in under the white flags, you know, the handkerchiefs, They were dashing forward while we were just disarming them and just going through the usual procedure of taking the belts off them and chasing them back. But what do we know condition for fighting? Not in the Folly area, which I can understand because, I mean, it had been blasted from the air and from the artillery. Must have been pitiful to be there.
Had you come across any Americans, made any contact?
Yes, at one time we were next to the Americans, fighting with the Americans, and there were darkies, actually, and we got on with them very good. In fact, they were giving us bags of tins of fruit, and it was really marvellous to get food like that, because the Yankees were feeding on the best.
Was this a view of the Americans that you had, that they had everything and you weren't quite so well off?
Well, certainly had more than what we had, because, I mean, I can't remember seeing having any tins of fruit. No, they were very good.
Were you getting an opinion of them as soldiers?
They were very good as soldiers, yes. I mean, the bit I saw of them, they were quite good. Of course, they were getting the same casualties as what we were. They were getting quite a lot of casualties. And they were all wide awake, you know, they were, which they had to be.
You're travelling very quickly in the advance. What happened when you got to Brussels?
Well, actually, we got to Eindhoven first. Now, I always remember when we got to Eindhoven, all these school children, they were, I think they were on this, a cart, and they all start singing to us, and I think they must have been preparing these songs at school for us arriving there, and then they put the flags out. It was laughable, actually. They put all these flags out of the houses, and anyway, we got into Eindhoven, and we got chased out. And then you could see that as we were coming out, they were pulling the flags back in. And Jay was coming back into Eindhoven, and then eventually we went back in again, and the flags were coming out. And I always remember that, because the lads used to say, look at the flags, I wonder whose flags they're putting out now. And after Eindhoven, we went into Brussels. And Brussels, the reception we got there was fantastic. Actually, we went into Brussels on trucks. They weren't just putting bottles of beer on the trucks, they were putting crates of beer on. And they were carrying crates of beer and putting them on, and the women were jumping on top of the trucks, so there was a proper hold up there, and we were held up in Brussels we were stuck there on duties for about 4 or 5 days, I would think, and in fact, I met this chap came up to us, and he spoke perfect English, and he had his two daughters, and they called him Albert Louis Witz. And he lived at 5 de la Loyenne to Bruxelles. And I corresponded with him for 20-odd years till he died. And he used to come up with his two daughters, and he used to give us fruit and different things what we didn't have. And I used to give him a bit butter or vice versa. And he used to tell us what sort of life they were living there, you know, and that they'd been waiting for us coming. And the people of Brussels were fantastic. That was really the best reception we'd ever had. It was indescribable.
Having been away for so long and seeing very little of the ladies, was there any attempts to start relationships with Brussels ladies?
No, we weren't there long enough, and as I said, the war was still on. We were still fighting. That thought never entered our minds whatsoever. Actually, the next thing was Giel. But women, well, that was out of the question.